Well, hello out there in radio land as we broadcast over the mighty internet. Many ways that you can choose to partake in this radio experience. So whichever method you've chosen, we thank you for lending an ear or two to this program. And I must say, your ears, your brain cells, and most importantly, your funny bone will thank you for indulging today. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio. And we bring to you once again from sunny, warm, humid, and alligator-populated Florida, our official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ronald L. Feynman. I just call him Ron. How are you doing on this fine day?
I'm doing fine. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, fairly fantastic, I must say.
Fairly?
been a pretty busy week, but again, it seems like every time we get together, Ron, it is a busy week. Something's going on, even in these sparsely populated states like Wyoming. Something's always happening.
In Alaska.
Where you can see Russia, or whatever it is that I guess you can see, besides the glaciers, the igloos, and all the beautiful mountains. Maybe a cruise ship.
Yeah, I got to say, based on the early results, which are not fine in Alaska, I think Sarah Palin might decide to stay home in Alaska. She's not running ahead for this House seat. So it's quite a blow that she ended up second in the early counting, but it could change.
Here on the Adam the Computer Guy mid-morning coffee break show with multiple monikers, we often share the microphone with Dr. Ron Feynman. Just heard him speak, and he's an expert on presidents, past, present, and future, and prognosticated American history in general. He's been on this station dozens of times with myself, with Glenn, with Scott, and who knows whomever else might be sharing the microphone and the airwaves with this gentleman.
Now, yeah, I mean, may I say, it's been about 250 times, I think, I've been on over 5-plus years. It's a lot of times, you know.
We will sentence our most dedicated listeners, Ron, to going to our website and listening to every single program. That's a sentence that I think would be quite enjoyable. Ron writes a blog called theprogressiveprofessor.com, where he takes an educated view of politics from the left. So if you're like me, an independent, you might agree with him sometimes. You might think he's crazy. You might swear at your computer or phone, or you might say, well, this guy definitely knows what he is talking about. We're going to go through his blogs from the last week very shortly. Now, Ron, you are still teaching. We don't always talk about...
Yes, I'll be starting this week on Tuesday and Thursday at Florida Atlantic University in the Political Science Department teaching the U.S. presidency. I have 29 students, and I'm raring to go.
That should be a good class about the presidency. Now, we've talked about your governor. I know you're not a fan of Mr. DeSantis.
That's understating it.
I mean, you like his education, his intelligence. He's certainly a whippersnapper, but the way that he snaps his whip, you might not be pleased about. But we do acknowledge,
yes.
I mean, he went to two Ivy League schools. He's a pretty smart cookie, but that doesn't mean that you agree
with what he
has to say.
Unfortunately, the smartness has made him arrogant, which I guess often happens with people who go to Ivy League universities. Even the liberals that go there tend to think they have all the answers.
Now, you've talked about how apparently in Florida there may be a need to filter what is taught, that it must be approved. And we talked a little bit about that before. Is your syllabus one that you have to submit? Do you have to bring it to Governor DeSantis's desk and have him stamp it approved?
No, but the university did say to be cautious in the use of language in the syllabus, although I did not change anything because I don't think anything I said in the syllabus is unreasonable. But I am not going to change the reality of the past. Like yesterday was slavery, Saturday was Slavery Remembrance Day. The first slaves arrived on August 20th, 1619 in Jamestown, and President Biden commemorated it. And yet we have in the syllabus in Texas and in Florida, for the public schools, they don't want to emphasize slavery, and they want to talk about how Washington and Jefferson were anti-slavery, which is not the case, because if they were anti-slavery, they would not be enslaving people and having, in the case of Jefferson, children with a slave. So it's lying, and I will not do that. But this is university level. I don't think there'll be a problem. But if I was at high school or middle school, I think it'd be a real problem, and I could either be forced to quit or lose my job because they're really trying to promote myths and lies, and that really infuriates me.
So there is autonomy in some ways where you are, but you do feel for your
brothers. Well, I'll discover. If there's a problem where a lot of students complain in the next term, as my oldest son David said, if they make an issue of it, look, I've done this. This is my 51st year. I like working. My mortgage is paid up, however. It's not like I absolutely need to work. I want to work, and I want to do it. But if there's going to be interference, he says, you just say, okay, goodbye. And that's what I will have to do if it comes to that at the end of a term, if I'm told that I am not doing things that are acceptable. I don't think it's going to happen, though, in my department. But we'll have to wait and see. But at least I'm not desperate for this income. But I enjoy doing it.
But it's just fascinating to me how we don't know what might happen.
Well, you never know what's going to happen in your life anyway.
But
I've made it through 50 years, no complaints.
Certainly.
One or two students may not like the grade they get, but no complaints that have led to somebody being told you can't teach it the way you want. That's liberal arts universities. You don't tell people what to do.
So we do feel for your brothers and sisters in the public schools and in the high schools, as they may have to change what they're teaching, how they interpret it. And sounds like it's kind of play it by ear. No one's really sure exactly what's going to transpire in this case.
Well, there'll be lawsuits brought, I'm sure. But also, some people are quitting. I see some elementary school teachers were quitting in Miami. It's sad because we have a shortage of 8,000 teachers in Florida. We have a vast shortage of teachers everywhere. And the idea to have people in the military become teachers without qualifications, that's what we're going to do in Florida in the public schools. I don't think that's a good idea, but there are lawsuits being brought, and I don't think this is going to be resolved. But it's going to be an issue when Ron DeSantis announces for president. I think he's going to have a very controversial competition for the presidency, even if he runs against Trump. He's going to have a lot of opposition, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I fear to think he might be elected president. I think he would be really worse than Trump, probably.
Like in many cases, looks like it's the lawyers who are going to get rich. They certainly will have a job.
Lawyers always make money, including Donald Trump's lawyers, if he pays them. And he needs them. He's got lawsuits in Georgia, Washington, D.C., Florida, and also New York. So he's being kept busy. And I still have a feeling he's not going to run at the end. But he's holding off anyway right now on announcing. But I think that there are going to be others challenging and that he may not go the route.
But either way, you have an exciting class that you're going to start teaching.
Oh, excited by it. Yes. Every president and the institution. Yes. Good and bad, plus and minus.
Many of your students, Ron, aspire to be teachers, I would presume.
Yes, and some want to be lawyers. A lot of them I've seen in the past always say they want to go to law school.
I mean, there's more money in law school, but you have to pay the student
loans.
And some
of them actually said they want to run for public office in the past. They have said that.
Do you kind of feel for the people that want to become history teachers, not knowing when they have their own class, half a dozen years down the road?
Well, I think it's a headache for anybody to be a teacher of anything. Even math is being politicized now. I don't know how they're doing it. And also science, where, you have those who want to promote Christian nationalism and promote the idea of Adam and Eve and all that and make it not science and all that. I mean, science is under attack, too. It's not just history. Literature also, you can't have all these novels that might challenge a kid to think and analyze and evaluate. There was a listing on Facebook of all these wonderful novels that are controversial, including Harry Potter, by the way, just as an example, but so many others, Huckleberry Finn, etc. And to try to decide they can't be in library shelves in schools or even try to take them out of libraries and have kids not read these things because they might challenge, their minds, it's horrifying. So it's not just history, it's all fields of education.
Yeah, Harry Potter is quite fascinating because the author has become the center of controversy for kind of a different reason for her thoughts about transgenders. And I would say I agree with her completely and admire her for speaking out. But a wizard school, that certainly would probably offend some people who don't think...
Because it's not Christian. It's not religiously based. Religion is not supposed to be in public schools, but that's what they're trying to do, bring religion and government together, religion and state together. That's against the whole concept of the Constitution.
Something tells me, Ron, I think you would agree that if we were to turn the clock back 40 years or so, and I were a student, and even taking the science and math that I pretty much indulged in, I'd be opening up my big mouth, probably to the point where I would probably say, I don't want to deal with this anymore. It's kind of a shame to think that. And again, you're teaching the educators of the future, attorneys, politicians of the future. And you have to wonder, you know, that's, as I said, half a dozen years down the road, where your student is teaching a history class, is she always staring over her shoulder to see if someone from government is going to say, well, you can't be teaching it that way?
This is censorship, and it's something that the government should not be involved in education. If you want to go to private school or religious school, fine, but we're having this move to try to, you know, privatize education and undermine public education and bring religion together with, you know, with education, and that is not good, and that's not teaching reality. It's teaching, you know, it's teaching propaganda. And I don't like to say this, but I'm going to say it. I'm not a Karl Marx, not Groucho, Karl Marx supporter, the founder, you know, of the theory of communism. But he was correct, I've always said, in what he said, that religion, and he's not saying any specific religion, religion is the opiate of the masses. It really is. Sorry to say, it's true.
One thing you and I can agree on, Ron, is separation of church and state. I'm not the history aficionado or expert that you are, but as I recall, one of the main reasons for the Revolutionary War was the concept of separation of church and state, and we can't ever lose that.
And also, people fled England and other countries to escape religious oppression and came here. It's ridiculous, but they're distorting history. And they're also distorting science, and they're interfering with math and with literature, English literature, American literature, and, you know, because you don't want kids challenging, you know, the status quo, but they have to challenge as part of growing up.
Now, religion, of course, the freedom of religion includes the choice not to have a religion.
And more and more people are not going to church, synagogue, or mosque. You know, the percentages are down. People, especially the younger generation, is, I'm not saying nobody is, but it's much less. And it's really religion trying to fight back the evangelical right and the Catholic Church, particularly, and Orthodox Jews trying to force their ideas on everybody. And I'm sorry, that's not acceptable.
Now, we could have a week's worth of shows on the money saying In God We Trust, other things that are part of American history.
Well, there are contradictions. Everything has contradictions, yeah.
Right. I mean, to me, my religion, I sometimes change the specifics every day. And I certainly respect people's rights not to choose a religion or not even to believe in God. But in my instance, Ron, In God We Trust on the money doesn't offend me. First of all, there are much bigger problems.
It doesn't bother me either.
Yeah, with the world right now.
Actually, that's only been since 1954 or 55 when Eisenhower promoted it because of the Cold War against the Soviet Union. It never was true before that, though.
So that, again, is an item that can be discussed, has been discussed, but again, I think we have bigger problems in the world right now. And how you interpret God, obviously, is an individual thing, and that's what I've always felt. I do believe that science is compatible with religion, as my beliefs have always been very scientifically oriented. But again, the In God We Trust, I wouldn't take it too seriously, but I am sympathetic if someone says, why do we have separation of church and state, yet we do have what could very well be considered a religious statement on the money. So you
just like we have a clergyman who opens up the sessions of the House and Senate.
Right. Many things.
Yeah.
And again, we could spend
I don't mind that.
Discussing
that
it, but I guess that's
but don't dictate the curriculum and don't dictate or pick on people on sexuality issues, you know, which unfortunately they certainly do. That is wrong. You know, those kind of things are just outrageous, really.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio, with our presidentologist, the walking encyclopedia of presidential history, Dr. Ron.
Not a walking encyclopedia.
Feynman.
That's so funny.
Well, better that than a walking encyclopedia salesman, the Britannica salesman, knocking on your door. I don't think we have that anymore.
Yes.
We have Google now instead of the Encyclopedia Britannica, but it was always
maybe
fun to go to the
Google
library and
okay. Yeah,
look something up. You know,
it's so silly, the whole idea
back
of walking
in the
anything.
Olden days when you and I went to school, we had the tremendous world book, the Britannica, in the library, and to those who were under 40 years old, that's how we did things before you could just hit a few keys and the enter button, or speak into your phone, ask Google a question, ask your Alexa a question, and voila, there it is. So a change in the way that's done, but sometimes you appreciate it more when the process isn't quite so simple.
Well, one thing that I think, that there's fewer people reading books in, where you actually hold a book in your hand. Most things are read. Even I do my newspaper reading online now. You know, I don't get newspapers anymore. And it saves space and all that. But sometimes I think, boy, we've lost something by not having books and newspapers so much, and magazines, you know, as much as we used to. But it certainly makes for less clutter.
Yeah, I would say we've changed so many things in society. We have a get it now mentality, which may be good in some instances. It certainly is great.
Double-edged sword, as I call it. Yeah.
For safety, we can get the help we need for many different things quickly. But the personal touch.
I'll be reading something, come across a word I don't know, so I type in the word meaning, and I get to know what the meaning is right away, you know?
The immediacy, the personal touch, that certainly has suffered, but we go onward and upward. Now, Ron is the publisher, I guess you can call it a publisher, because it's a website, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and it's been around 12, 13, 14, 15 years.
14 years this month, yeah.
We did celebrate the anniversary thereof on a previous show. So let's turn, Ron, to Sunday, 8/21/22. Donald Trump.
Yes, yesterday.
You write a lot about Donald Trump, but we know how much you love him.
Now, how can I avoid it? You know, and if you look on the right, at the topics further down on the page, you'll see how big the name is. You know, you'll notice Barack Obama's very large, Donald Trump's very large, Democratic Party's large, presidential election of 2012 particularly. I'm surprised it's that large. Republican Party is a very large, but other things are also large. But, yeah, those are the ones that have been the most, I don't know why 2012 particularly. That's like surprises me. But
let's say that Donnie Baby has kept your blog in business, no exception from last Sunday. Donald Trump, the most corrupt president in America by far. Now, most of our listeners are familiar with Watergate, even if it's from a history book. And good old Tricky Dicky, he certainly had trouble keeping his nose clean. But in many ways, like the environment, foreign policy, was considered a very good president.
Yes, he was. That's why I teach Nixon. People are surprised. They think it's all negative, I'm going to say. But it isn't. There's some real positive things to say about Nixon. You're right.
Sometimes you get into a position of authority and you just get corrupt. You can't handle the pressure. And that's what I think happened with Tricky Dicky, as we like to call him. Now, you give a
list. I've always said, though, as I say in this article, that Nixon would be shocked at what Donald Trump has gotten away with or tried to get away with.
I think Tricky Dicky is up there in heaven, Ron, giggling profusely.
Shaking his head like, how does he get away with it? Which I don't think he's getting away with it, but I mean, he's being held accountable. But, I mean, the fact that so much has happened, yes.
Of course, Nixon is wearing his polished dress shoes and his three-piece suit, as we've talked about. The man always wore a suit and tie. Even, I think, he wore one in the shower. So I'm sure he's in heaven, dressed very well, giggling at this entire course of events.
I think it was part of being insecure that he did that, actually, that he thought he had to play the role of always being fully dressed in a proper way, you know.
So you make a list, Ron, of corrupt presidents, and including Warren G. Harding, Ulysses.
Unfortunately, not personally. I don't go into it here, and not Grant so much personally, but people around them, a lot of the appointments to cabinets and scandals around him. Yes, but not personally. Only ones really personally would be Nixon. Not really Reagan directly. More like he was unaware. But a lot of people around Reagan, including the Iran-Contra scandal, as an example. George W. Bush had a lot of negative things. But I would not say personally. I think Nixon and Trump are the only ones that really, I think, is personal, you know, to the extreme.
Yeah, Ronald W. Reagan and George W. Bush.
Now, notice I don't say H.W.
Right, so not his father, George H.W. Bush.
Yeah, and I don't say Gerald Ford. He looks better all the time as Gerald Ford.
Yeah, Ford definitely. Again, he was never elected directly. He was an appointed VP. He didn't win re-election, although he was pretty close. Jimmy Carter, who's almost 150 years old, or it's pretty
old.
He's
going to be 98 in another month. Yeah. It was just his wife's 95th birthday this week on the 18th.
Yeah, I remember watching the results. They came in like 3 or 4 in the morning. I went to sleep. My mom went to sleep. My mom woke up because she didn't like Carter. As I told you, Ron, she thought anybody from the South was a hick.
Well, actually, at the time, I wasn't thrilled about it. It took time to get used to him, and I think I'd said before that I wasn't thrilled when he got in. I went along with him, because, but I've come to really admire him more and more in the post-presidential years, yeah.
So, remember, she woke up.
He did some good things, yeah. But it was hard to get used to him because he was from the South. That's true.
Yeah, and she said, Carter won, didn't he? And yes, Carter did win. No scandals with
very
hanging
close,
chads.
50-48 in percentage, but yeah. He did win. But if it wasn't for Hawaii and, get this, Ohio, small margin, he would not have won the electoral vote.
But no hanging chad controversies.
No, but Ohio and Hawaii decided this. Ohio even more because it has more electoral votes than Hawaii.
No lawsuits, no January 6th festivities.
Ford was a good loser, and they became the best of friends after they were both out of office, the best friendship since Adams and Jefferson after the presidency. And they did it in person, not by letter writing. And it was agreed that whoever died first, the other would give the eulogy at his funeral, and that's what happened. Carter gave the eulogy in 2006. And here we are, 16 years later, and yet he's still with us.
And you conclude the article by saying that's why Trump has already been rated by scholars as in the bottom three of all presidents in history, only ahead of Buchanan and Andrew Johnson, who battle each other for last place.
And one of the more recent polls puts Buchanan last, usually is that, but the other one puts Andrew Johnson. I would put Andrew Johnson probably worse because he's more of a nasty human being than Buchanan. He really is a miserable wretch of a human being, Andrew Johnson. Even his photographs show he has a snide look in his face, and Buchanan doesn't really have the same situation, so I would probably put Johnson last now.
Adam here on The Talking Place, WGH Radio, speaking with Dr. Ron Fineman about the state of the Donald, let's say that, about ready to start teaching a class on American presidents at the University in Florida, where he is a faculty
Florida Atlantic member. University, not UF. I don't want to confuse people. That's in Gainesville, which is 300 miles away. This is Florida Atlantic University in Boca Raton, part of the state university system, but not UF.
What did I say, United States? Oh, UF.
You said University of Florida.
Oh.
That's a specific school in Gainesville.
Uh-huh.
It's Florida Atlantic University in Boca, which is part of the state university system. But
gotcha.
UF is University of Florida in Gainesville, and that's the best school in the state. If I was there, that would be fantastic, but that's 300 miles north of me.
Kind of like the University of California. There are several different
Yes, but in our state
campuses.
Here in Florida, it's University of Florida, University of Central Florida, South Florida, Florida International, Florida Atlantic. And there's others as well.
So you are Florida Atlantic.
Atlantic University.
Your class in
Raton, Florida.
American president. You said 28 students this year?
29. As of today. It could go up to 35 maximum. There might be some additions the first week, but right now it's 29.
And
yes.
We've talked before that since Donald Trump, again, love him or hate him, we're not talking about whether you like the guy or not, he has certainly piqued people's interest in the presidency, and no doubt has caused more people to want to take your class, even if they're not planning on being history teachers or politicians or lawyers or something that would be.
Yeah, I think I think a lot of people generally are interested in presidency because it's in our face all the time, whether it's him or Joe Biden or Barack Obama. I think, it is an interesting office, and it's interested me since I was 10 years old.
In this class, Ron, we haven't talked too much about the specific curriculum. Is there a textbook? Do they even have textbooks anymore? Do you read PDFs online?
Sorry. Well, first of all, the textbook is soft cover, but I do give a textbook. I guess you could call it a textbook. It's not, I guess you call it that. I just call it the major book for the course. And I'm trying to find it just for a moment. Give me a minute here. The American Presidency, Origins and Development, 1776 to 2022, ninth edition, and these two people are great authors, Sidney Milkis, M-I-L-K-I-S, and Michael Nelson. Sidney Milkis and Michael Nelson, The American Presidency, Origins and Development, 1776 to 2022. It's updated edition, ninth edition.
Is that the book you've used most of the time? It was obviously updated recently.
Yes, in the early years they use the 8th or the 7th, because every 4 years or so they have a new edition. Yes, this is the newest edition. I've used it a lot. And the students, as a group, I don't know how each person thinks, but generally they've always seemed to like it, yes.
So you can cover all 45 presidents in one class?
In one semester, yes. Yeah. Not one class, not in
yeah,
one...
Well, I mean, one class throughout
one
the term,
yeah.
Term.
Yes. I even mentioned William Henry Harrison, the one-month wonder. But not much time. Now, obviously, I don't spend equal time on all of them, but I do talk about them all, and I talk about their background, their life, and all that, and then about, you know, about the positive things that occurred and the negative things. And, of course, that's based on judgment of scholars. Everybody has different views, I guess, somewhat. But I try to show them as human beings.
That must be one tough final exam, having to remember and learn
well,
about
the
all
the final is only, actually, the way I do it, I have a paper also. But the point is, there are three exams, and each exam covers part of the course. I don't have the final being cumulative, so it makes it a little bit easier, I guess.
Okay.
The last part of the course is really more on just the most recent presidents and on the vice presidency, which I spent some time on, and also on the institution itself and the cabinet members and all the stuff around it as far as the people who advise the president and all that. So, but the first two, you know, the first part of the course covers from the beginning with the Constitutional Convention right up to 1900. I use that as a cutoff point, 1900. Then I do 1900 to 2000. The 20th century, and then I cover Bush, Obama, and Trump, and now Biden. I had a little bit on Biden already. I'll say a little bit more, and then also the institution itself, and the, you know, the people who advise the president, and the whole process of the election of the president, the nomination process, all that stuff comes in the last part of the course.
So, for the students, Ron, who bicycle to class, do they get extra credit for being better bicyclists than the current president?
Well, a lot of them live on campus, first of all, and others come by car. I don't think many people bike to. There are some, I guess, that do, but a lot of them live on campus, and some, of course, drive there, as I do.
Well, you know, laughter is the best medicine. I thought I would tell kind of a silly, corny joke just to
Well, there are some who, actually, there are some who bike, but not very many that I've noticed when I'm walking to class, no.
And these are undergraduate students, right? There's no graduate
These
school.
Are undergraduate students, yes, and mostly juniors and seniors. Either they're majoring in political science or history, or they just might be people who have an elective credit, you know, liberal arts credit, and they find the course interesting. But, you know, very few freshmen, because they have to take an American government class first, a general survey of American government and politics. So there's only a few exceptions, but some people might be in the class who have not taken that course, the American government survey.
Well, it sounds like a enriching and sometimes...
Oh, it's a great class.
Yeah,
I love it.
Entertaining experience for your students, and... We encourage
and I
young
tell
people.
Them the first day that I say, I always say to them, you're going to love this course. I love it. I've done it. I'm going to tell them now for half century. I'm going to use the line, I'm starting my second half century today. And they'll probably laugh.
Yeah, we just say.
But I just love the course. And I'm a person who I've been told I inspire people. And I'm very excited to listen to because I don't talk like a monotone. That's not the way I speak anyway. So I'm very enthusiastic and very committed to what I'm doing.
So when you started the class, was Tricky Dicky the president, or what?
Well, I didn't do this course way back, the exact course. I taught American history surveys and then period courses in the history department. As far as this course, I think I first started to teach it about 20 years ago. So at that time, I guess it was probably, well, actually 1990. So actually it might have been when, when Bush 1 was in and then Clinton, I started to teach it. But not every year all the time, but I first started to do it in the 1990s. So it was with Bush Sr. and then Clinton, yeah.
Certainly, bottom line is, Ron, any student who questions your knowledge, maybe challenging a fact you give, is going to be in for a rude awakening, knowing how much...
No, I don't get rude to anybody. Yeah. And actually, I've had people come up with points I didn't know. I have to look up. I don't know everything. Not a lot, but once in a while I say, gee, I don't know. I have to look that up. And I look it up and tell them the next class. I don't just dismiss it and not bring it up again. I mean, I learned from students, too. Not a lot as much as I used to years ago. But I'm still learning. I learn all my life. And so students can come up with an angle that I hadn't thought about. And if I don't know it, I'll say, gee, I don't know that. I'll look it up. I don't try to cover it up or hide it, you know, but I know there are professors who, God forbid, you say anything at all, but I don't have a problem with the challenge.
Well, certainly.
And I've never had a student be rude to me, ever, in 50 years, never, because I'm not rude to them.
Well, that certainly is rare. I'll say that much. Adam here.
I remember one time, since I'm bringing it up in a class, not maybe this course, but another course, I had a student who was talking a lot in one of the rows, and I said, please, stop, you know. He kept on doing it. I'd said it a few times, so I said, okay, you have to leave. It's the only time in all these years. Now, it doesn't matter. I'm just pointing this out. This is a tall, looks like a basketball player, an African-American male, and he gets up, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, is he going to punch me in the mouth as he passes by? No. He walked by. He left. And then after the class, he came back and apologized to me. Isn't that nice?
Nice and quite rare. But
yes, really. But for a moment, I said, oh, my God, am I going to be a victim because he's a really big, big guy compared to me? You know, but he just was talking, but he just said, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that. And he never did it again. So, you know, it's a kid's. We all make mistakes. Not a big deal. And I'm getting angry and create a scene, you know.
Adam Lepp here on WWGH Radio with Dr. Ron Fineman, our official presidentologist, as I call him, expert on politics, author of the blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Going back to August 16th, which I believe was Tuesday of last week, potential for more African-American senators in 118th Congress. There have been 11.
Yes, there is. There's four people running that could very well win. Do you want to read it or should I?
Well, just read the highlights. Now, one of them is speaking of athletes, former football player Herschel Walker. I know you're not really a fan of the gentleman.
No, I think he's brain damaged, actually, seriously, from his football years. Yeah, he's running against Raphael Warnock, the Reverend Warnock, who used to be the head of the Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, where Martin Luther King was, decades ago. And he got elected to the seat, but it was only a two-year remaining part of the seat, of the term. So we have two African-Americans running against each other. One is a pastor, and the other one's this football player who's lied about his life.
Nearby Kentucky, we have Charles Booker, maybe related to Cory Booker, maybe not.
No, he's not, but he's also very young. He's only 37. Wow. Against Senator Rand Paul. What I would love if Rand Paul would be retired. I just can't stand the guy, but it's going to be hard in Kentucky, I think, yeah. But in Florida, Val Demings, Congresswoman Val Demings, former police chief in Orlando, is running against Marco Rubio, and it's very close, and there's a chance she could win that seat. And then Cherry Beasley is a woman who was state Supreme Court Chief Justice in North Carolina, and she's running against its open seat Congressman Ted Budd, who is a Trumpite. And then in Wisconsin, 35-year-old Mandela Barnes, the Lieutenant Governor of Wisconsin, is running against Senator Ron Johnson. And he's way ahead at this point in polls, but it doesn't mean it's going to work out. And I still would be shocked if it actually happens because he is African-American. Being African-American definitely creates problems for any candidate that it makes it harder for them to win, you know.
So interesting Senate races on the agenda. In case folks are bored because it's not a presidential election year, don't despair. The Senate races will certainly keep you at the edge of your seat.
Well, just like the women races, like in Arizona and Michigan, you know, we're going to have the Secretary of State, Democrat Katie Hobbs in Arizona running against Carrie Lake, who scares me to death, honestly. And Tudor Dixon is also scary in Michigan against Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Two women against each other. I haven't written about that right now, but I'm certainly going to talk about it. Those are really significant races in states that had disputes about whether the electoral votes went correctly to Joe Biden, Arizona and Michigan.
Yeah, looking at the state to our north, Michigan, you know what I think about Whitmer? I mean, there are things like abortion that I'm likely to agree with her on, but on COVID, she's horrendous, and they should lock her up for life. I mean, I don't agree with that, but that's how I feel.
I disagree, but not lock her up for life. That's going a little
But I think far. Even I you would agree that she was extreme on COVID. I know we don't agree on that. We agree on some of it, but I think you would agree she was a bit extreme versus how other governors
have handled it. I would defend it by saying she was doing what she thought she needed to do, but you don't have to agree with it, but don't lock her up for life for trying to protect the health of people.
And in reading about her opponent, I can't say I'm much of a fan either, so I'd like to think
she's scary. Yeah. She and Carrie Lake, oh my God, and there's also other men in other states, like the Senate race in Arizona, Blake Masters against Mark Kelly, the former astronaut. He's scary, too. A lot of these people are election deniers, which is really scary at this point, that after all this time, they're still promoting that. At least I feel that way. So there's a lot of scary people running.
Yeah, and just coming off the scandal, Mayor Kirkpatrick in Detroit, been a lot of unfortunate incidents there in the state of Michigan. We'd like to think we can be proud of the state to our north, but they've got a few issues, but I'm sure in the end it'll work out okay. If nothing
I hope so. Liz Cheney, of course, is now going to really go to war against Donald Trump. And I'm scared by the person who replaced her in the Wyoming seat. She seems like a real wacko. And if you look at her, she looks like it in her face. I mean, the pictures of her, she seems like she's going to be another, I guess, like a Lauren Boebert or a Marjorie Taylor Greene. And that's something we need, you know?
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Lori Lightfoot in Chicago. Looking at her in the face, not going to win any beauty contests.
Well, I'm not talking about beauty.
But I think she has kind of a scary look to her also, and that's kind of
part of the image. What a name, by the way.
Yeah.
So, I actually wonder, is she partly Native American with that name? I bet she, I don't know. I never looked into her background. She might be partly Native American.
Certainly some colorful characters.
Like a Native American name, you know?
Colorful characters, Ron, that are going to elicit controversial responses. And as I say, in the case of Michigan, I wouldn't know whom to choose because I'm not thrilled with either one, but kind of reminds me of the last presidential election. You got to pick A or B. And we encourage people.
We didn't have time, and I guess we won't today, to talk about what Ron Klain, because we don't really have the time, it's pretty much run out of time, Ron Klain about the accomplishments of Joe Biden now that we've had some real results. It's a very interesting article. We should do it, I guess, next week, August 20th, because it's really a very, and beyond that, more research I did. It's a lot that's been done that we don't realize, but, they're all small things, and a lot of it took a long time to come about because of the 50-50 Senate, but he has accomplished a lot, no matter what you think. Yeah. He's accomplished a lot in a lot of areas.
Well, I might be purposely avoiding that article.
That?
I might purposely be avoiding that article. I do get a couple statements in which you won't probably not agree with, like my statement about Governor Whitmer. Again, even though there are things about her that I find appealing, I like having a female governor to our north. And again, there are issues that I would certainly find myself in agreement with, but her handling of COVID was, deplorable as being kind. Let's put it that way. So we'll go to your blog from Monday of last week, A Contrast in Two Republican Women, two very different Republican women. Liz Cheney, daughter of Dick Cheney, the VP that you don't want to go hunting with, and coldest state, hottest governor, Sarah Palin. So we've got about 6 minutes left, Ron. Tell us about that article. I know you don't like Sarah Palin. She's not known as the sharpest tool in the shed.
No, she's not, but she ended up, I don't remember the name, I don't have it in front of me, of the Native Alaskan woman who ended up first in the early counting, but it's a slow process, it's not final, but she ended up, I think, 5 points at this point ahead of Sarah Palin. So it's not final, but there's a good chance that this Native Alaskan woman will be the House member to replace Don Young, who died after 49 years, my God, as the House member from Alaska. But I think it's quite a smack in the face that she's not ahead already. Now, she may win it at the end. It's not final, and we know that so all the votes are counted, but right now she's like 5 points behind. Now, as far as Liz Cheney, she was walloped. Oh, my God. And I'm not a Dick Cheney. I can't stand Dick Cheney. And I don't agree with Liz Cheney about the actual voting record. She was like 93% voting with Trump. So I don't like her ideas, but I like her principle that she's concerned about the Constitution and the rule of law, and she's outraged that 95% of Republicans in Congress are going along with Trump and ignoring what happened on January 6th. And she's already made the statement recently that Kevin McCarthy should not be Speaker of the House, even if the Republicans win, but most likely he will be. And if not, I hate to tell you, who's the backup? Your congressman locally, Jim Jordan, which is worse, in my opinion. So, and then also, the next in line, if the Senate does go Republican, I don't think it will, would be Chuck Grassley, who would be 89, another six-year term he's running for. Hopefully he will not win. And he's making crazy statements about the IRS is going to be able to come in with weapons and come into your home to collect taxes. That's reckless. That's not true. So he's like at 89, you got to say he's a lunatic. Maybe he's lost his mind already. And these would be second and third in line to be president after the vice president if both houses go that way. We would have Kevin McCarthy and Chuck Grassley. That's a horrifying thought.
Well, Ron, Willie Nelson's 89, and we gave away tickets to see him perform at the Ohio State Fair, and people said he did a really good
job. The government is a difference.
Well, you know, singing in front of thousands and thousands of people, that's not easy. I'm not saying politics is, but, you know, some of us age fairly well, but...
But making a statement about the IRS, which is totally false, about that they're going to come in and, you know, with weapons to take money away from you, that is ridiculous. It's not true at all. And, of course, Kevin McCarthy has shown no principle. All he wants to do is be speaker. He doesn't care. He actually condemned Trump, and then he backed away and changed his view. And so did all the others. Although Mitch McConnell is more, he's not as supportive. So there's a split between him and, between McCarthy and McConnell also. But Kevin McCarthy, I think, is a disgrace, and I agree with Liz Cheney on that.
And there's been quite a bit of talk about these tens of thousands of IRS agents being hired. What are they, auditors?
Well, the reason is half of the IRS agents that are being hired are to replace people who are retiring. That's why, it's not like they're all brand new, meaning, the increases. It's about half of them are replacements, and others are over a period of 10 years, there'll be additions of IRS agents. But the Republican Party and the right-wing Fox News channel and all the others, they all distort reality, and they get away with it because people believe their lies and their myths. So a lot of those people are replacement for people retiring.
Yeah, I guess it kind of depends upon which source you read. And like most controversial situations, I think you would agree, Ron, the truth is probably somewhere between both extremes.
Well, we can say for sure that no source is perfect, but Fox News has been distorting reality since they were created in 1996, and they really should not be regarded as a reliable source.
You know, as my mama said, time flies when you're having fun. This show really did fly.
A lot of fun today, yes.
Yeah, I've only covered like half of your blogs, so we'll save it for next time.
Well, we could do some of this next week, and I'll have new entries, yeah. Thanks again for inviting me. I enjoyed the show a lot.
Yeah, I think a change in the demographics of the Senate, that's an interesting study. I do believe that a governmental body should reflect the demographics of whom they serve, but we shouldn't vote for somebody just because he or she is a minority or because he's she.
No, of course not.
We should vote for the best candidate.
It looks like the Senate will become more Democratic. So it seems there's so many bad choices, including in Ohio. Yeah. I think J.D. Vance
it's like
is
when I
horrible,
mentioned,
but we'll see. But on the other hand, the House still is more likely to go Republican. It will go Republican because it's only a small few seats edge. So it's going to be a split government. It's going to create not good situation, going to be chaos because the two houses won't cooperate together, unfortunately.
It's like what I mentioned. Yeah, it's cool that Michigan has a female governor, that Chicago has a black lesbian mayor. I just don't like these particular office holders. So I like the demographic, but I don't like them. But that just makes
things
more fun.
One thing I got to say, which sounds sexist, is Tudor Dixon in Michigan and Carrie Lake in Arizona are horrible, but they're very attractive, no question. But that's not the way you're supposed to vote, based on looks. And actually, Gretchen Whitmer's good-looking, too. And I would say Katie Hobbs is all right. But it's just funny how people have often jokingly said that Republican women tend to be beautiful but dumb. This is a generalization. And Democratic women tend to be smart but usually not very attractive.
Well, we appreciate having you on the show, Ron. More points to ponder.
Line, but somewhat it's true in many cases as far as looks and intelligence. Well, they don't always match together.
I don't dispute Lori Lightfoot's intelligence, and she has a very good resume. But
yes,
easy on the eyes would not be an accurate assessment. And again...
But you have to agree Gretchen Whitmer is nice looking, right?
I wouldn't enter her into a beauty contest, but she's not bad looking by any means.
But Carrie Lake and Tudor Dixon are knockouts, I would say, but that should not be why people elect them. But it might help to elect them, God forbid.
It doesn't hurt.
Yes.
Well, thank you again, Ron, for being here with me on The Talking Place. Lots of points to ponder, lots of items to giggle about, and maybe you had to swear at your listening device a couple times during the program, but that's all part of the fun. Adam Lepp here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.